locked in on Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Drantz here with you. Coming to you live from the Kintech studio. You could text in 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. The Canucks in action. Pivotal game tonight in St. Louis. Puck drop at 4:30. Mark the start time. You can hear it here on Sportsnet 650. Yeah, we're going straight from Canucks Talk into Canucks Central after this. So no gap time. You go right into Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah to get you ready for tonight's game. But before we continue talking about it, did want to hear the comments of Rick Tocchet following morning skate today in St. Louis.
Rick, you've kind of talked about how every game lately is like a playoff game, but talk about the added pressure in this one against St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, they're all big games. I think the mindset, you have to have different mindset every game, right? In the sense that, you know, obviously the Utah game, we didn't like the third period. We kind of parked it. We moved on, and you have a good effort against Winnipeg. It's no different than playing a hot St. Louis team. Same thing, whole different game. Same mindset, but the fact of the matter, it's a different game, and you gotta think that way.
Coming off that big 6-2 win against Winnipeg, what parts of your game do you like that you hope to see carry over to tonight?
Well, I thought, you know, if you could look at every player, I think every player contributed in some way. I thought the bench was really good, and when you play teams like Winnipeg, you need everybody. I thought we checked the puck really well, and you know, we had some really good, I thought some really nice goals. You know, we held on to pucks, we got the puck in the middle, got a couple rush goals. Best in front of the net on a rebound goal. Those are the type of goals that win you games at this time of the year. So hopefully you can do it tonight.
Monty was talking about the vibe around his team, and they think it's their game of the year. Just the excitement. Do you sense the same on your side?
Yeah, I think it's a game that, you know, every game is the most important, right? That's what you think every game you play in. They're a hot team. So we got to make sure that we take care of the puck. We know they're a really good rush team, and they have a lot of swagger and confidence right now. So when you play teams like this, when there's a lot of swagger, you got to make sure you don't give any freebies. I think that's something that we got to really dial in tonight. No freebie goals. You know, we have to play smart but aggressive.
You'd probably describe Winnipeg as similar, in, like when you talk about dangerous team, rush team, confident team. So to play the way you did against them so recently, can you kind of tell the guys we got to duplicate that here against this team?
Yeah, I mean, that's the time of year. You know, that's what you're looking for. You know, every inch matters now. You know, every change, like every good change matters. It should matter every game. It really intensifies. You know, a bad change could cost you the game. You know, an undisciplined team with bad penalties or, you know, you're not really reloading properly, can lose you the game. So I think, you know, we talked about last year a lot with the staples. I mean, the little things matter in these type of games more than ever. And that's what we're kind of preach tonight.
Have you been kind of impressed with your defensemen clearing out the front of the net? Seems like guys aren't, opposition players can't really stay on their feet in front of the net. They've been just moving guys out.
Yeah, I think we're getting better at it, I think, since Christmas. Where, you know, don't focus on the puck, you know, get the body position, then the puck. I mean, that's something that we've really stressed, even as forwards, you know, in the offensive zone, is, you know, body position, then the puck. You know, it seems like when we're not at our game is when we're kind of, you know, we're puck focused, right? And I think we got some good veteran D, you know, Forberg, he's one of our best guys at taking the body, Mizey, you know, guys like that that are leading the charge for us.
Looks like Garland's good to go, is that?
Yeah, I think he's good. I still got to talk to him. I mean, I haven't really talked to him, so it's like not another game time.
And where are we with Demko?
Well, Demmer had a really good practice the other day. He, you know, I know it's a morning skate. He got the full net.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those, you know, he's obviously getting close. But what date? I don't have an exact date.
The two times he came back this year, he backed up first. So are we getting close to that maybe where he might?
You know, that's a good question. I haven't really thought of that. I think when he's ready to go. You play him, like if he's ready to go. I don't know, he has to back up first before he plays. I'm not quite sure about that at this time of the year. But if he's healthy, you know, we got to stick him in.
But not tonight.
Not tonight, no.
There is Rick Tocchet speaking to media in St. Louis ahead of today's game against the Blues for the Vancouver Canucks. The Thatcher Demko content at the end. Like he said, not going to be in tonight, but getting close. Doesn't have an exact date. If they can get him at some point on this road trip, that would be huge. Just to get him in for a game, even for one game, to give Lankanen a slight break, that would be really, really big.
Yeah. Yeah, no question. I mean, I like if Demko isn't trending to be an option against Columbus or the Winnipeg Jets, and by the way, either opponent is a really tricky one to come back against, I think you have to play Shelovs against
the Islanders.
The Islanders, yeah.
Yeah. You know, like I just don't know how you can go all six games with Kevin Lankanen.
No, because where would you end up? You'd end up with what, 14 starts across how many days off? I mean, what, we're at 8 of 15 right
now? 8 of 15, and then this road trip spans 10 days, so that would be 14 in 25.
Yeah, that's...
Which is just insane.
Not doable.
Yeah, so I would expect to see one other goalie.
It's doable. It's just not doable at while maintaining the sort of save percentage level of performance that, you know, would could be said to give a team a chance to win every night.
It would also be a strategy that's like, hey, you can get to the playoffs, but then you're like, Lankanen's gonna be he's gonna be exhausted by the time you get to the playoffs if you're rolling with him like that. So you got to find a way to get another goalie in. Ideally it's Thatcher Demko, but we'll see what happens for the Vancouver Canucks. Also Tocchet mentioning that every inch matters. I've been a proponent of that for a long time. Game time decision for Connor Garland. I thought I'd move right past that. Game time decision for Connor Garland. So for the people that want to see Jonathan Lekkomäki, there is a chance that he might be in if Garland is truly a game time decision, isn't ready to go, but it does seem like Garland should be ready to go for tonight's game.
I mean, guy's a dog. If he's, you know, If he's close, he's going to do everything he can to play, whether he's healthy or not.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That's who Connor Garland is.
Definitely. So one thing as well that we kind of touched on, but it seems like the theme for tonight, what the Canucks are aiming for, is mistake-free hockey. He mentions no freebie goals. Every change matters. Like, every little bit of this game matters.
Does every change matter more than every inch, Josh?
Well, probably not. But who knows? Who knows? But
we already touched on every inch mattering.
Yes, every change
Sorry,
matters.
I'm trying to move on.
He also said every little thing matters.
Yeah,
and I agree with that too.
100%. It's all connected.
Yeah.
I mean, what were you on about?
Just mistake-free hockey is key tonight, and that's probably why we don't see Jonathan Lekkomäki in this game.
Yeah, and especially against a team loaded with one-shot goal scorers the way that this St. Louis Blues team is, right? I mean, Braden Schenn's not a driver at this point in his career, but he can still hurt you with his shot, right? Kyrou, we know what he can do off the rush. We know what he can do as a shooter. Robert Thomas, we know what he can do as a passer. We know what he can do as a shooter. Dylan Holloway on an unholy tear. And I don't think you could design a player in a lab better calibrated to be a handful for this Canucks team because of the size-speed combo, because of the rush attacking ability, right? Like, that's the exact profile that can stress out Vancouver's bottom two pairs and their top pair because of the size down low, right? So, I mean, that one to me looms large here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I do sort of view the Blues like I was going on about Utah being a bad matchup for the Canucks. I was saying that I thought Winnipeg was a slightly better matchup for the Canucks. And I think the Blues are like the, you know, the just right Goldilocks between those two poles. They have enough. They have a little bit more team speed than Winnipeg, I think, to stress the Canucks out in terms of rush defense. But maybe not as much as Utah does. And Utah is so good defensively that I think they have a narrow, like, they have a more straightforward path to locking the Canucks down, I think, than the Blues do. So really, really, it's an interesting matchup and such a critical one for the Canucks. They just have to come out of tonight with points.
Yeah.
Like, more than anything, with points. You just can't have the 4-point swing against you.
The other part of this that, look, Winnipeg is clearly a better team than St. Louis, and I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But what St. Louis does have going for them tonight is a desperation factor that Winnipeg didn't. Like, the Jets came into Vancouver, they didn't need that win. They ideally want the win, pushing for the President's Trophy, all of that. But there's a level of desperation we're going to see from the Blues and hopefully the Canucks tonight that will not match what we saw from the Jets on Tuesday in Vancouver, and that's something the Canucks need to be ready for as well. This one, Johnny from Langley. I am sitting here concerned about a major flop after the high of the Winnipeg game, hoping this team can learn to build on the highs instead of living off of the highs. And that's one thing that I think a lot of Canucks fans are hoping to see tonight is just a consistent effort game to game. Because one thing we've seen often throughout the season is the Canucks will have a really good game and you go, okay, they're back. They can do this. They can play well. They can start putting wins together, heading in the right direction, and then they lay an egg. And we saw it against Calgary, the Canucks, they had a good third period. You thought, okay, hey, maybe this is where things can start to snowball in the right direction for the Canucks. They play well against Chicago, but ultimately in the game that mattered against Utah, they didn't show up. And that is probably the biggest fear for Canucks fans tonight, is just having another game where it's a dud. And to me, like, obviously you need points. The thing that's going to go a long way in getting those points is playing like you did against Winnipeg on Tuesday, especially that top line too. Playing like they did against Winnipeg.
Yeah. It was a decisive night for that line offensively against the Winnipeg Jets. And they actually had some rush attacking juice, obviously, especially on that critical 3-1 goal, right? You like Hoglander getting in on the forecheck to set up that game sealing, the backbreaker 4-2 goal. But like, you're not getting goalie fails to cover puck.
No.
Goals on a regular basis. Aside from that, you know, I felt like most of their chances came early, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah, but they were also up going into the third. And I think you can expect when this team is up going into a third period, they're not going to be pushing too much offensively.
Yeah, but we also don't want to let results guide us by the nose solely. You know, it wasn't a dominant outing. It was a productive outing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a key delineation there that we struggle with, right? Like, not all losses are bad. Not all wins are great.
Yeah.
Right.
I wouldn't say it's dominant, but just felt like a step in the right direction.
I hope so. I don't know. I mean, I thought, put it this way. You hope that at the very least they take the confidence from that run of good results into tonight's game, right? Because they looked and played like a confident line. And I don't know that we'd say that's been true for the last month for either of Besser or Pettersson. So hopefully it was a step in the right direction, but I don't know that from where we sit today. Like, that's on them
mm-hmm.
to carry the momentum over.
And that's kind of what I'm getting at, is like, that's the thing you need to see, is momentum carrying over game to game. And that's the thing we haven't seen from the Canucks in general through most of the season, aside from Quinn Hughes and Kevin Lankinen and Connor Garland, Kiefer Sherwood.
Yeah, the consistency. We just haven't seen much consistency out of this Canucks team game to game, and we're at the pointy end of the season now where the club can't afford to have more. Like, you have five more of those slip games,
mm-hmm. you're done.
And it's over.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't afford those because you're still probably only going to win 60% of the games that you're, like, good in.
Mm-hmm. And that's infinitely more important in this game in particular. Like, this cannot be the game where you lay an egg. Because, again, this is the most important game of the season.
And yeah, I mean, I guess they did sort of lay an egg against Utah in that key 4-point game, but they brought it against Calgary, right? So, but yeah, I mean, look, this team's been so all over the map, even just across the last 10 days, right? And every time we get this team on the right foot, it's like, they're fine. Everything's good. They're building momentum. And every time they play like they did against Utah, the sky's falling. Like,
yeah.
At some point, we can't react or overreact that much to the results of single games. Like, this team's going to show us who they are now. You know, like, they've got an opportunity to reframe the narrative that's surrounded them all season of dysfunction, of underperformance, of disappointment, of inconsistency. Like, that's the opportunity that lies ahead of this group. you can flip the conversation. But I guess I struggle with the idea that what we saw against Winnipeg was of such a like high caliber or level that I'm going to see it as like a trend. You know what I mean? Like, do it again tonight. Do it on Saturday against JT Miller and the New York Rangers. Mm-hmm. Right? Get on a run before I say you're on a run. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sort of throwing up my hands here a little bit just because it's been so difficult to put your finger on what this team is at any given moment all season.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, definitely. It's been hard to pinpoint what the Canucks are going to be going into any game. And that's been probably the most frustrating, one of the most frustrating things, because it does come back to the Elias Pettersson aspect of it too, where it's like you didn't know what he was going to be going into particular games for the Canucks. Now that seems to be trending in the right direction, and hopefully the Canucks are too. But you're right, you do need to see it game to game before we can look at it and say, hey, this is a trend, this is what this team is going to be. Because as of now, what they are is a very inconsistent team that you don't know what you're going to get night to night. That's what the Canucks need to start ironing out, and we need to see it today against the St. Louis. I never know, like 4 o'clock, 4:30, is that a today or tonight?
That's a today? Yeah.
Okay. It's still light out here when they play.
Or I guess you could say this afternoon.
Yeah. Is that afternoon or evening, 4:30?
I'd say afternoon. Past 5 o'clock is evening.
Okay. I think I agree. This is why we're going to have a show together.
Also, a lot of people were mad at me about claiming that dim sum isn't brunch.
So I know. I saw that.
You took the W on that one.
Lots of people who never agree with me, too. Like, people who are like, I hate when I agree with Drance, but dim sum is definitely brunch.
I love how everyone who ever agrees with you has to, like, preface it with that. It's like, you know what? I hate that I have to agree with Drance, but he is right.
Yeah, that's fine. Stop booing. I'm right.
Yeah.
Sorry, we were talking about I lost my train of thought thinking about dim sum. No, right before that. Oh, evening.
Evening
can be 4:30 p.m.
Right.
In December.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah,
I think it varies.
Whereas, like, evening can also be, like, it's not night sometimes in August at 9:30 p.m.
True.
You know what I mean? When you have like those, like, dusky, it's, like, still light out. You know, like, that's not night to me. That's evening.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it, like Drance is saying in December, you come in here for like noon, right? And then you leave at 6 o'clock. It's pitch black.
Pitch black.
Yeah.
Done.
So,
yeah.
Nighttime.
Usually when I leave, because I produce Canuck Central, when I leave at 6, I'm like, oh, it's nighttime.
Oh,
it sucks.
It'll be starting to get dark when I leave at 2 some days. And you know what I mean? I'm like, I can tell that night's already coming. So, in my opinion anyway, night or evening changes. It's a variable. It's a variable description of the time of day based on the time of year.
Okay,
that's
so
my view.
I'm rolling with today for the game. That's the ultimate determination we made from that conversation.
But winter is coming.
Winter is well, yeah. It's also going. 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. This one from Concrete Craig. Afternoon, boys. With the several upcoming games being early starts, does it make sense? Is it even possible to adjust practice times accordingly, almost treating them as if you're prepping for a real game at that time the day before practice? That's from Concrete Craig. So the Canucks, in terms of practice, it's generally hard to get practices in later in the season. The benefit they have, and you've mentioned it, in being in New York, is there isn't as much travel for their three games following this, right? Because they play against the Rangers, that is a morning game, then they play against the Devils, and they play against the Islanders. So if you were going to get practices in during this little stretch coming up, this is probably where you'd be looking at doing that.
Right.
Like, tomorrow they'll probably do something because they won't have a morning skate on Saturday.
Well, and I don't know exactly their schedule, but sometimes teams like to get a skate in at, like, sometimes you get ice at, like, Chelsea Pier or somewhere that's, like, actually quite pleasant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, let's go for a skate.
Nice experience.
We're in Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We, afterwards, like, very few guys take the bus back. You walk to the market. You walk around town. Like, you're in, you know, like, that's nice. You walk the High Line.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Chelsea Pier practice now. If you have ice out in Newark, a little different.
Yeah, you might not want it.
Yeah. So we'll see exactly how they handle it here. But yeah, I would expect them to practice tomorrow. So Demko gets in a full practice tomorrow. Could he be an option for the Islanders game? That would be the cushiest spot to begin to fill him in.
That would be like the most ideal of scenarios, because then you can see kind of where he's at against a weaker competition or weaker opponent in the New York Islanders, especially when you're comparing that to a team like the Blue Jackets, who are going to be pretty desperate, and the Winnipeg Jets, who are obviously one of the best teams in the league. The Islanders will be desperate too. They're just not as good as the other teams you're going to play against, especially offensively. And so that would be such a cushy spot if you could fit Thatcher Demko in, if he is ready to go. And then you get home, you play against, I believe their first game, it's against Seattle. When they get back from the road trip, you have Anaheim in there. You have a back-to-back, too. So if you can start to get Thatcher Demko into the mix before the end of this road trip, that would just, it feels like it would go such a long way for the Vancouver Canucks. We'll see if they can. We'll see where he's at. And again, what Rick Tocchet did say after morning skate today, not going to be starting, obviously, not going to be the backup tonight, but he is getting close, does not have an exact date, but did mention he had a really good practice morning skate where he got the full net the other day, and obviously seems to be trending in the right direction if he's even on this road trip. So good signs for Thatcher Demko. We'll see when he gets into the lineup, but tonight it is going to be Kevin Lankinen getting his eighth start in 15 days for the Vancouver Canucks. We'll see how it goes.
Should be interesting. I mean, they really do have to be mindful of Lankinen's workload, and obviously they need Demko to come back. Like, they just need a second reliable NHL option here.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
It's so scary to go to Artur Shelyov's right now.
You can't do it.
He just doesn't have the confidence.
He's only beat the Chicago Blackhawks in nine starts this season.
Mm-hmm.
They have 5 points in his nine starts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you were to build the list of all the things that have had to go wrong for the Canucks to be in this spot, right? March 20th, a key 4-point game against the St. Louis Blues, right? All the things that have had to go wrong, all the injuries, all the disagreements behind the scenes leading to the trade of JT Miller. Right there with it, there's like two sort of other factors, like just like silly dropped points that don't actually tell you a lot about who this team is, that I think have to be weighed really heavily. One is the overtime record, mm-hmm. right? Like, this team's inability to win games in overtime has been incredible.
Yeah.
You win an average number of games in overtime, you're closer to the Minnesota Wild than you are to the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah.
And the other one is, if you pick up 5 of 18 total points with your day one starter, your game one starter in net, like, that's a hard thing. Like, 5 out of 18 possible points in the Shelyov starts. Like, you pick up 9, you're closer to the Minnesota Wild than you are to the St. Louis Blues, right? Like, of all the sort of dumb things that have caused this team to stumble, like, Shelyov's performance is, you know, it's probably not up there with the Miller-Pedersen dynamic. It's probably not up there with, hey, without Filip Hronek, the Canucks only had one defender that was capable of playing at all 3-on-3.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
a factor.
It's a subhead for sure.
On the other side, we're going to speak to Matthew DeFrank, St. Louis Blues writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We'll get into the opposition for the Vancouver Canucks tonight in a very pivotal game. It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Strands on Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk, Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Drance here with you, coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. You can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. 3.5 hours away from the Canucks' biggest game of the season, and to help set it up, we go to the phone lines. Matthew DeFrank, St. Louis Blues writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joins the show. Appreciate you taking the time, Matthew. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing well. Here, there's a lot of pressure on this game today in St. Louis. What are the vibes like there around this game tonight?
Yeah, I think they're all pretty excited about it. This was a game that even after the Blues beat the Predators on Tuesday, they were already looking forward to it. I mean, after that game, Dylan Holloway was saying, yeah, we need to forget this one already and move on to that one because we're excited about that one. And, you know, Jordan Binnington said they were talking about the game on the plane ride back from Nashville to St. Louis. It's an atmosphere that the Blues are anticipating is one that they haven't seen for quite some time in St. Louis. They haven't made the playoffs since 22. They haven't really been in a true playoff chase really the last few years. Last year, they're kind of fake in it late in the season, but this year is an entirely different feeling, I think in particular because of how they've played since the break, 9-2-2, and playing, honestly, some of the best hockey, regardless of the record that they've played all year. So the vibes are pretty good in St. Louis right now. They're excited for the game tonight, and they're expecting a pretty hot crowd.
Maddie, it looks like they're just shooting the lights out, and the real story actually should probably be the defensive turnaround under Montgomery. Does that match what you're watching?
Yeah, they've had basically the best defense in the league since November 24 when Montgomery was hired. You look at all the underlying analytics, and whether it's shot attempts, shots on goal, expected goals, high danger chances, scoring chances, like all of those are in basically the top five in the league, and a lot of them are actually one. I think expected goals on natural stat charts model is number one in the league since then. And it's, you know, until this recent stretch that they've had, the results hadn't really matched that process. And that was kind of opposite to what had happened last year when Bannister took over.
Mm.
When Bannister took over, they had a really great power play. They had one of the best goaltending tandems in the league, but their 5-on-5 numbers were still garbage. They were bottom 3-5 in the league. They were there with Chicago and San Jose, and they just rode a hot power play and a hot goalie to a good record, and that's how Drew Bannister kept his job over the summer. But this was kind of the opposite this year, where the underlines were there under Montgomery. They were so much better than what they were under Bannister. And the PK was the worst in the league. The goaltending was inconsistent, and that's why they weren't getting any results. And you know, since the break, the PK, they've been really good outside of one game in Dallas where they allowed 4 power play goals. And then the goaltending has had its ups and downs still since the break, but you know, Bennington came out hot after the Four Nations, and Joel Hofer has been really good his last 3 starts.
Have you seen, has there been an uptick for Binnington since he became a Canadian hero?
In the first few games, I would say yes. But the game in Pittsburgh, that was only one of their 2 regulation losses since the break. And he wasn't very good in that game. Like, that was a game where they territorially dominated, possession-wise dominated, chances-wise, and they just didn't get the saves when they needed to from Binnington. But he bounced back on Sunday against Anaheim, and if we found out anything from Four Nations and from Binnington's career in general, is that he enjoys the big games, the big atmospheres, right? And I look at this season alone, and you can count the atmospheres that he's played in. One was opening day in Seattle, made 30 saves and won the game. His return to Toronto, it's always a big game going home. He made 40 saves and won the game. Winter Classic, he made a big save on Taylor Hall in the second period and won the game there. Four Nations came out. It wasn't always as solid as he was in overtime against Sweden and the United States, but ended up winning the championship with that overtime against the U.S. And then tonight's going to be the latest big game of the season for him, and he showed up pretty well in the previous one. So I wouldn't say that he carried it to this point right now, about a month in from that tournament, but definitely the first few games from that, it was almost a question whether they would go to him on both ends of a back-to-back. And I do think that they considered it the way that he was playing after the tournament, but they like the way Holford's been playing in the last week or two. And so they've started to split it up a little more during this condensed schedule they have.
We touched on the team defense a bit, but no Colton Parayko for the last couple weeks and still getting solid defensive results from the Blues defense. What has been the reason behind that, and how have they been able to make it work even without Parayko?
Yeah, this was something that Montgomery talked about after the game in Nashville on Tuesday, was that, you know, the defense just, they were good in almost every aspect of their game. They had really good gaps in the neutral zone. They were shutting down plays on the boards in the D zone. They were leading to clean breakouts and obviously less time in their own zone. So they were doing a lot of small things that added up to big things and kind of keeping Nashville at bay for most of the game. And yeah, I don't know how much longer they can keep that up, because you know, Parayko was in the middle of a career season offensively, and he was still doing it against the best offensive players on the other side, whether it was top pairs, top lines, really hard PK minutes. Like, he was doing a lot for the Blues this year and eating 24 minutes a night. And you lose that during a critical time of the playoff run, and they haven't really lost a step much at all. It's tough to look at the personnel and say that that's the reason why, because I don't think the Cam Fowler and Nipoletti pairing has been all that good since Parayko went out. I think the pairing that's really stepped up has been Philip Roberg and Justin Falk. And then obviously the third pair they have is Ryan Suter and Tyler Tucker, but they haven't needed to really lean on all three of them as much. And I think the Broberg-Falk one has been used as a top pairing, getting the D-zone starts, getting the top lines, getting more ice time. Like, they've been really solid, and Falk and Broberg have been solid individually as well.
The Holloway glow-up. Here, let me ask you this one. After Armstrong's success targeting Edmonton with the double offer sheet, and what Broberg and Holloway have brought, not just in terms of making the team better this season, but, you know, maybe even durably changing the complexion of like what this young core kind of looks like, right? I mean, they have just a higher volume. You know, it used to be just like Kyrou and Thomas, and there was like nothing else. And now you can at least go a couple names deep. Obviously, guys like Neighbors and company stepping up has helped that too. But with that success, do you think we see NHL teams begin to look at offer sheets as a more legitimate device to add talent to their lineups?
I think a lot more teams will consider it, especially with the cap going up. I know the cap goes up for everyone. Like, it's not an advantage that some teams have that others don't. But the thing with a team like the Blues last year, they were in sort of the right position to do this. They were a team kind of in between. You know, they weren't going to be a rebuilding team going out and using that cap space and signing players. And, you know, they weren't going to be one of these contenders that were struggling to sign their RFAs anyway. So, like, they were in the right position. And so I think you can look at some of those teams, like maybe even like a Calgary or something, where they're kind of in between. They're on the bubble of the playoffs. They're kind of a year behind where the Blues are, honestly, when you think about last trade deadline and what they did, and two trade deadlines ago and what the Blues did, kind of selling off those UFAs at the right time, getting those assets and trying to contend. Like, it's a similar position. And, you know, before the season and whatever Washington did, I would have considered them kind of in the same kind of middle boat. But those types of teams where you have cap space, you want to be competitive, I could see it. And the thing with the Blues and what they're trying to do right now, they didn't tank for a top pick, right? The best pick that they've had so far in the last 15 years was number 10, and that was Dalibor Dvorsky they took 2 years ago. So they weren't going to have these, you know, generational, so to speak, players at the, you know, the top 1, 2, 3 picks in the draft. And so this is the way that Doug Armstrong's always built his teams, was kind of building deep teams that can run three really good lines and a physical fourth one. And in order to do that successfully and kind of turn this around, he had to pull some rabbits out of hats, right? And you think about Broberg and Holloway as maybe two of those, and hoping that, I mean, whether it's Dalvor Dvorsky or Jimmy Snuggard in college in Minnesota, whether they can turn into true top-line guys. And suddenly you're looking at a top six that doesn't have a superstar, but does have a lot of really good players. And that's kind of the team that Doug Armstrong's built throughout his time in St. Louis. And we'll see what Alexander Steen does next season with that philosophy. But they've shown that these RFAs, at the time, we thought that their contracts were over market value, and they were. Because if they were at market value, they would have been matched, right? But the fact that they are now looking cheap, like Dylan Holloway's about to, he's got a 50-point season at 2.29, I think, 2.29.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's one of the best values in the league, and Broberg, the points have been kind of slow coming recently, but he's just looked better and better all year, too.
It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf and Thomas Drantz joined by Matthew DeFrank, St. Louis Blues writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Go ahead.
Just let me interrupt. So for people who don't know, Matt DeFranks is a Floridian, a native Floridian. the rare native Floridian hockey writer. I think it's what? You, George Richards, there's like six of you in the whole planet, which I love, by the way. And
a lot of them are still in Florida, probably.
Yeah. The rare Florida transplant in the Midwest covering hockey. There's what was your reaction as an American to the Four Nations face-off? And what was your reaction as an American to the idea of like an American-Russian summit series that's been in the news this week?
Yeah, I mean, I love the hockey over the break, you know?
Yeah.
I think kind of all of the things combined made it really fun to watch. There wasn't a lot of other sports going on. Like, the NBA had their all-star break. I mean, baseball was the spring training. Football was done. Like, it was a really good time in the calendar, and hockey took advantage of it. And the hockey was unreal to see the atmosphere in Montreal. I know the political undertones probably had a lot to do with the national pride going on both sides. And I don't know, I love watching it. I love watching the intensity that it had. And even like there was that first period in Montreal, and there was the overtime in Boston, but the game, like the periods in between, were still just very fast, physical, fun hockey to watch. And I would have liked to have seen some of the other countries play, and I think we all understand why Russia's not there. And I'd be interested in watching some more good hockey, whether it's Russia and the United States. The circumstances of it, not really in love with it, but I think the hockey side of it would be great. I think as an American it was fun to watch, and I think a lot of people down here had similar feelings, particularly in St. Louis, when they see, both Tkachuk brothers fighting and
right.
Colton Parayko fighting in the first, 9 seconds.
What about their reaction to Jordan Binnington crushing their hopes and dreams?
Yeah, it was weird because, a lot of the hockey fans in St. Louis are obviously Blues fans, and the Blues weren't one of these teams like Florida where they had nine guys going to all four countries. Like, they only had two guys. They had Parayko, they had Binnington. That obviously Doug Armstrong, they had two members of the coaching staff were on Canada. So they had five Blues, and they were all on Team Canada. So I think a lot of the rooting interest from just like wanting to see those guys succeed was with the Canadians. Obviously, I think they liked that Brady Tkachuk was able to score in the final. But, I didn't really sense a lot of,
animosity,
jingoistic national pride in St. Louis in particular.
Oh, weird. That neither did we in Vancouver.
Matt, before we let go, I did want to ask about because there was smoke around his name around the trade deadline. I don't think there was any fire around his name, but Jordan Kyrou, has he, like, he leads the Blues in points this year. Is he a divisive player in St. Louis? Like, are there higher expectations on him than he's provided so far?
I think he was more divisive in previous years, where a lot of times when he wasn't scoring goals, he looked like a lazy, disinterested player who was soft on the boards. Like, that's what the reputation was of him in St. Louis. And this year has changed a little bit. I mean, he's a lot better away from the puck. If you see the puck get chipped off the glass and out to the neutral zone, he'll be one of the first guys back to pick it up and reload and go back in again. In the D zone, he's a lot stronger in board battles. Like, he's not going to be a sulky guy. That's just not who he is. That's not who we expect Jordan Kyrou to be. But the fact that he's improved those areas of his game, the details are better, it's something that Blues fans can at least appreciate. I think a lot of Blues fans, and this was a really poor comparison that I was given time and time after game, was they thought Kyrou was like a Mike Hoffman type of deal. Like, oh, he only does one thing, and his one thing is score goals, and of course he does it better, a lot better than Mike Hoffman has ever done it. But that's kind of who they thought he was, and he's kind of changed that a lot this year and about to post his third straight 30-goal season. And I think the return of Jim Montgomery has probably helped him too. He became a true NHL top-line player when Montgomery was an assistant coach, and a lot of that was just allowing him to be a creative offensive guy when he does have the puck. A lot of coaches aren't kind of giving all that freedom to someone like that, and Montgomery kind of preached that when he was an assistant. I'm sure he brought it back when he was a head coach. And we talked about Holloway earlier. Him and Kyrou will stay on the practice ice for maybe 45 minutes after practice is done. There will be times where we will finish all the interviews in the room with Montgomery. We'll walk out past the ice, and they'll still be on there, just the two of them with a bag of pucks. And that wasn't something that was happening before either. So I think Holloway's work ethic has kind of rubbed off on Kyrou, and Kyrou's maybe offense has rubbed off on Holloway as well. So they've complemented each other really well and provided a nice second storyline for the Blues.
Back in November, Matty, we had a conversation where I lost my mind watching Brandon Saad forecheck against the Canucks earlier in the year. To see where this Blues team has been lately, regardless of whether you buy their, offensive results or whether they make the playoffs or not, to see where they've been lately, just from an effort level perspective, how big a difference is it for someone who's watched this team every game this year?
Yeah, it's not like this group right now is not a group that Brandon Saad would fit into. Just like, I mean, the fact that the Blues were able to get out from that contract is a massive win for them. Like, already, he walked away from about $5.5 million just to go somewhere else. There was this game in Los Angeles, I guess about a week ago, 10 days ago, whatever it was. They're on the second night of a back-to-back. It was a 5 o'clock start after a 7 o'clock start the night before. LA had been sitting there for 3 days resting. The Blues had just learned they were going to be without Cam Fowler. His wife was having a baby. They're already without Parayko. Joel Hofer was starting. Like, all of these factors on a back-to-back, like, it would have been really understandable if they just came out there and they had nothing and they got pounded. But that game, they did have nothing. Hofer kept them in it. But you see in the third period, these guys are laying out, blocking shots. There were probably 4 or 5 times in the third period alone where you have the shot blocks that get the bench standing up and tapping the sticks. Like, that was the kind of effort that they were putting in that night, and it's the kind of effort that they've been putting in on an almost nightly basis, really. So the fact that they've kind of made some changes to the forecheck that have asked a little bit more of their forwards, they've asked them to block a lot more shots. Like, it's been a contagious thing for them, and it's something that Jim Montgomery has mentioned, that his team has realized that hard work is fun. The hard work is leading to results, and the results are fun, and therefore the hard work is fun. And that's the way that they've been playing hockey recently.
Hey, Matt, really appreciate you taking the time, and enjoy the game tonight.
All right. See you guys.
There is Matthew DeFrank, St. Louis Blues writer for the St. Louis Post Dispatch. And the Blues have been very hot recently. He mentioned it, 9-2-2 since the Four Nations break, 7-2-1 in their last 10 games. And we were close to writing them off in the past couple weeks.
I've written them off all season.
They didn't write back, though.
They did not write back, and good for them. And now that, you know, it was like live on air about 10 days ago, we had this moment where I was looking at the schedule. I was like, the Blues have the easiest schedule, strength of schedule remaining in the league. That's interesting because I don't think they're at the same level in terms of true talent as the Canucks or Utah.
Mm-hmm. But I think that point still stands, obviously.
Oh, I definitely still believe it. Like, who's going to finish, you know, if we had 50 games remaining, I know who I'd be picking. But we don't. We have a very short stretch. It's a sprint here, and these are teams that are facing disparate quality of opponent the rest of the way, with the Blues having by far the easiest schedule, which makes denting their playoff hopes now, while you still have control of the situation the way the Canucks do tonight in the gateway to the Midwest, or gateway to the West, excuse me, they absolutely must take advantage.
Mm-hmm. This show is 2 hours of being like, this game's really important. It's a very big game.
Make sure to watch it.
Play well. Make sure to watch. Make sure to listen.
Yes.
All the way up until 4:30 today.
This evening.
When they play, this afternoon. 4:30, such an in-between time. I just don't know. I'll give it to either. Evening, afternoon is fine. Anyway, 650. We got an open segment next, so if you want to text in, you can on the 650 Dunbar Lumber text line, and we'll try to hit it. On the other side, it is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Strand, Sportsnet 650. Segment of the day on Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Drance here with you, coming to you live from the Kintex studio, and you can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. It is March Madness, so there's a lot going on in the studio right now, including we all have brackets. Dom, say he's not in today, but he sets up every year the March Madness bracket for not only us, but for listeners as well. I believe we have 32 total people in our bracket pool.
I won 2 years ago.
Yeah. And you didn't let us forget it.
I didn't win last year, though.
For a year. And then I think Elon won last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Elon's always good at these, by the way. Elon's like a quality poolie.
He's a very big college basketball guy, too.
Yeah, me too.
College sports in general. Yeah. I am not. Decidedly, I am not. And I don't try to hide it. It's just not my thing. During March Madness, I enjoy it, but I never know the storylines other than Cooper Flagg is good going into...
Well, and Con Newble.
Yeah. You could have made that name up. I'm not going to lie.
It sounds made up, doesn't it?
You do have a perfect score, though.
I do have a perfect score. So there are 7 total perfect brackets remaining.
Do you have McNeese?
I have McNeese.
Me too.
In our Sportsnet bracket. Samesies.
Well, I'm going to get you when Bryant beats Michigan State. So,
yeah. Well, maybe. I don't know
gonna
what
get
I
you
picked.
And I'm going to get rich.
Yeah, fair enough.
Bryant. Anyway, I love March Madness. I love single game elimination. Anything.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Sign me up for single. It's one of the big reasons why I'm so vociferously team playing. Mm-hmm. Like single game elimination hockey, like I swear the playoffs are mostly just like me waiting for the 3 or 4 times a year I get to watch an all in game 7, and then I watch it like breathlessly.
Yeah.
So excited.
Yeah.
Like I really wish the NHL could figure out different ways to engineer more single game elimination hockey for me, because mm-hmm. I want it. That's all I want.
And I feel like a lot of people would enjoy it.
Yeah,
but
it rocks,
you know what, Bettman likes it the way it is. That's what he said yesterday. But just to pat myself on the back one more time, Pat, lean on the back, we are the only remaining Sportsnet 650 employees.
Guys, we're 5 games in. Calm down.
Perfect brackets.
It's
perfect
the only time
brackets.
We can say this, okay?
I know, we have like half a day we can say this. Actually, you know what, we're also on pace to end the day with perfect brackets, but that's
fine. Do you have VCU?
I have BYU, and I believe Lena does too, but I think BYU is up right now. Oh, it's tied. It's 22-22.
It is a struggle. We'll see. Guys, but VCU is pulling that out, so perfect bracket's going to end soon.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, so that's why we're saying it now.
Yours has already ended, Drent.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's not perfect.
You busted early this morning.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. None of the teams that I had that lost, first time.
We almost moved past
it. We've already gotten a text from Cam from the first segment. We surely
his bracket got busted.
Which what did we get a text from Cam on?
The Every Inch Matters thing? That's what Rick Tockett said. I don't know why, I'm just repeating what the coach said. Every inch matters.
Sorry, I probably should have let you off the mat and not kept bringing it up.
No, it's okay. I brought it up.
Anyway.
Yeah, but your bracket's busted. That's all I was trying to say. Yeah, 6:50.
None of the teams that I have, the lost matter. They're not going anywhere in my bracket. So
also,
fine.
The only reason I picked Creighton was because their name was Blue Jays. And you know what? That was all the... That was all the reason I needed. 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. We've gotten a few texts about Lekker Mäki not playing tonight for the Vancouver Canucks, or not expected to play tonight. Once again, Rick Tockett, speaking after morning skate today, did say Connor Garland is a game time decision, though he did take part in line rushes, all of that. So it would be very surprising, I think, if Connor Garland didn't play, especially because you mentioned it. He's a dog. He's a gamer.
Yeah. And he didn't take the morning skate on Tuesday when he didn't play against Winnipeg.
Exactly.
So he's already in a different routine than he was when he missed Tuesday night's game.
Mm-hmm. And he's not a guy that misses games. He had an Ironman streak for a long time. I think he had the 28th longest in the NHL before he missed that Winnipeg game. So that one probably hurt for him to miss, and he wants to get back into the lineup as soon as possible. But what it means, what I think a lot of people turned to immediately if Connor Garland got back in was, hey, Linus Karlsson will probably be out of the lineup and Lekker Mäki will stay in. That doesn't seem to be the case. It looks like it's going to be Linus Karlsson playing on a line with Teddy Bluger and Drew O'Connor. But the thing that frustrates Canucks fans about that was the small sample of Lekker Mäki on Power Play 1 that we got on Tuesday. And I said it earlier in the show, it's a small sample size, right? They had one power play. It looked really good. I'm not going to argue with that. I wanted to see Lekker Mäki back on Power Play 1, back playing in this game to see... So hopefully get more of a sample size of what he looks like on the top unit. Doesn't seem like we're going to get it. But that being said, I don't think that because Lekker Mäki is out of the lineup, that means that the top power play unit is going to struggle. Like, it might, but I don't think it's the immediate obvious outcome, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Lekker Mäki showed promise more than anything else, right? We're looking at it as something where Lekker Mäki impressed in a big opportunity, as opposed to something where they couldn't possibly go away from it, right? I mean, at least that's how I'm looking at it. Like, it was something I want to see more of, not something that I think they can afford to not stick with.
And what I will say is every time he's in the lineup from here on out, because I assume he'll work his way back in, he needs to be on Power Play 1, in my opinion.
Mm.
Because I don't, nothing about Connor Garland 5-on-5, I think, is an excellent player. I think he does a lot for this team. Nothing about him on the top unit inspires me. Because he's not a threat to shoot. Zone entry, sometimes he can be good at that. He's good at controlling the puck. But I just don't know. I find it more beneficial to have someone who's a legitimate shooting threat in Lekker Mäki on that left flank.
Yeah, I also think it moves Besser into a place where he's better. Like, he's a better fit. So I like them having an additional flanker option, especially in the wake of the JT Miller trade. That's really, for me, the key reason why I want Garland there. I think the overall thrust of this, though, is Linus Karlsson played really well against the Jets, and his, heavy stick and big body, I think his defensive responsibility, hockey IQ, I think really appeals to Rick Tocchet. I think we've seen it. We've seen that in big games, Rick Tocchet really does trust Linus Karlsson. And yet, for whatever reason, Karlsson, who's already been extended for next season, by the way, hasn't really been able to like carve out a full-time NHL niche in Vancouver. I think it's the speed. I think the speed is too limiting, ultimately.
It's definitely speed-related. Yeah. Every time he gets sent down, it's like, well, he just kind of wasn't able to hang with NHL speed.
Yeah, and he's got good hands and tight. Like, he does a lot of good stuff. It just, for whatever reason, he can't seem to get cooking at the NHL level consistently. I do think it's that he just can't keep up. But, you know, that doesn't mean that Tocchet doesn't see value there, and that doesn't mean that in certain matchups or in certain moments, the club's not going to prize, you know, the heaviness, the strong stick, the sort of work at the net front, the ability to handle in traffic. Like, that's all stuff that I think Tocchet matters a lot to Tocchet, especially in the context of, you know, the old moment speech.
650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. This one from JP from Montreal. In terms of today's game, says, I feel like the Canucks have an edge on the Blues on their defensive lineup with a more defensive posture. This might be this could be a 1-0 or 2-1 game. That's JP from Montreal.
It could be, although I think the Blues, don't sleep on the fact that the Blues have been a better shot. Like, the Canucks are a really good defensive team, but the Blues have been better since November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, now like the Canucks have dealt with more absences, but nonetheless, the Blues have been a more consistent defensive group over the course of the last several months than the Canucks have. And the Canucks have been really, really good in and of their own right, which just speaks to just how dominant the Blues have been defensively.
So one thing on Tocchet that has been going around the past couple days since we brought him up, and especially in the fallout from his interview with Halford and Brough on the morning show, he mentioned the North style when it comes to Elias Pettersson. He mentioned that Elias Pettersson likes to play regroup hockey, likes to slow it down, and they're trying to reprogram his brain. Mm-hmm. And we kind of brought up, like, hey, like, realistically, Tocchet's trying to get him back to where he was before. He's not trying to make him a different player. He's just trying to get him to a level where he's equally as successful. And then we saw the way the Canucks scored on Tuesday night. And a lot of it were jokes, but I think some people seriously looked at it and went, oh man, the Canucks regrouped a few times before they scored. Tocchet's going to hate that. Like, that's not what Tocchet wants.
No.
And to me, like, he even mentioned it in after morning skate today. He said, love that they got rush goals. Like, he all he wants, I think, is for them to attack the neutral zone and the offensive zone with speed and try to create more off the rush. And that's what the Canucks did well on Tuesday against Winnipeg, specifically on that Nils Höglander goal where Brock Besser, he kind of got the puck, and both Pettersson and Höglander were in the offensive zone. Besser got it outside of the zone, had to regroup because it was offside. All three of them attacked with speed.
Yeah.
So there's a combination of, hey, you regroup, and people look at that and they're like, well, Tocchet isn't going to like that. But then they immediately play with a lot of speed and attack north. And that's what I think Rick Tocchet is looking for from this team. More so than, like, he doesn't want you to, he's not saying that the forwards need to keep going straight ahead all the time. That's not how hockey works. Just, this team needs to play with more speed, especially because they're not a fast team, right? But you can play fast as a team. That's what we need to see from the Canucks more, and that's kind of what we started to see on Tuesday, and we'll see if they can build on it. We talked about it. It's hard to pinpoint what this team is going to be game to game. But if that's something they can continue to do, make more consistent in their game, that's going to lead to the results people want to see from the Canucks. And that's also going to be a more exciting style, more exciting brand of hockey if the Canucks are able to do that on a more regular basis.
Yeah. There's nothing in hockey, like, people often say, like, oh, don't dump it in. It's like there's some of the best shot generation, some of the best offensive teams rely on stress hockey, which relies on, you know, very rarely moving zones with possession. There's no instrument or technique or tactic in hockey, glassing out, what have you, high flip, that is, like, bad on its face, right? It's about the combination. It's about the execution, right? That's it. when Tockett's sort of besmirching regroup hockey, I don't think he's saying you can't regroup. He's talking about a style of regroup hockey that he doesn't think can work long term, that results in a team leaving opportunities on the table because they're not playing quickly enough and seizing on opportunities. And that's something that Tockett talked about at length too after the club's first round loss to the Edmonton Oilers. He thought they had some opportunities to really press their advantage off the rush and declined to do so. And, you know, it held them back in his mind, especially when he was reviewing the tape following the loss this summer. It's a big reason why this team wanted to, you know, break out differently, why they worked so hard on some of those anchoring plays and on those landmarks, quote unquote, at training camp. And, you know, the club hasn't been able to execute those things consistently enough, but they did. Like, that regroup with time winding down, that's great situational hockey, period. Mm-hmm. Right? And I guarantee you Tockett loved it, especially when it scored sort of a key backbreaking goal that allowed the Canucks to grind out two key points against an elite side. So, yeah, it's not regroups themselves that Tockett doesn't want to see. It's a style of regrouping where you're declining to press potential advantages or declining to pressure, put pressure on like the defense, even in two-on-two situations or three-on-three situations. There's opportunities that can open up. If you go fast, if you go north-south, if you go as a group, if you get that center lane drive, that can create the sort of chaos that offensive chances result from.
Yeah.
That's it.
I just feel, especially lately, I think people, you know, like I get that frustrations get to people and a season like this, especially when you're being inconsistent and struggling to score offensively, you look at the coach and you go, oh, like he's doing something wrong, especially when his public comments maybe lean into the narrative you're trying to create around him. But realistically, I just think that he probably wants to see much more from the Canucks offensively has been trying to get that out of them than we've seen from the Canucks so far this season. The thing it comes back to is, A, your best player offensively, your best forward in Elias Pettersson has struggled so mightily throughout the season. And B, outside of that, do you have the offensive weapons to do a lot offensively, right? Mm. Like, you bring in any coach right now, maybe they get a little bit more offensively out of this team, but not much. Like I don't see the huge offensive upside in this roster, especially in the forward group, that other people seem to be seeing that would warrant a different coach getting more out of this roster.
Yeah, I mean, I struggle to imagine. Like, let's be real. Nils Höglander on the top line, love to see him doing well there. Love to see him doing well there, but when you write it on a whiteboard, as the Canucks management team surely will at the end of the season, is that something where you think we're set there or we need another top line winger?
No, I think they would prefer him in the bottom six, right? Like being a guy that drives his own line, maybe every once in a while pops up to the top six, but
yeah, or second,
not a mainstay.
Or middle six guy anyway, yeah, at this point in his career, you don't want to lean on him as a top line player. You know, Dan Murphy's tweet has Linus Karlsson in the top nine. As we've talked about, like Linus Karlsson hasn't managed to cement himself as a regular NHL player, much less a top nine guy. Pugh Suter on the second line. Kiefer Sherwood on the second line. Are those things where you'd look at those guys and say, man, we'd be a really sick team if those guys were on our fourth line?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like if you were able to roll out a fourth line with whether it's Linus Karlsson or Drew O'Connor, Pugh Suter and Kiefer Sherwood, you'd be like, we are cooking.
Yeah. But
that's the sort of forward depth the Canucks had last year.
Yeah.
Neil Zaman in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Struggles to score often, right? So you sort of Teddy Bluger in the top nine.
Yeah. Right? Like your center depth, especially right now, is just so, especially with Filipetal out, is just it's so bare.
I think you go through the forward group and it's like half of these guys aren't slotted where you'd ideally like them to be, which is not to say they're not good players. They are. It's not to say they can't win tonight. They can. It's not to say that these guys can't be part of a hugely successful team. Most of them were just a year ago,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, it's just that what should our reasonable expectations in terms of the offensive juice of this group be, given the actual composition? Like, I don't think they should be very high. And I think that's what Tockett's seeing when he's like, we have to play mistake-free hockey.
Yeah, exactly. And like at this point in the season too, especially after, You know, like going into the season, it was fair to look at this roster, especially because most of their additions were made on the offensive side. It was fair going into the season to expect more from them offensively. But with how this season has panned out, you obviously trade JT Miller. You flip that asset for a defensive defenseman in Marcus Pettersson. You do bring back Filipino, but obviously does not have the upside as of a JT Miller. You get to this point in the season and it's like, okay, if you're going to win games, it's going to be a defensive first mindset. It's going to be trying to play mistake-free hockey. And that's where the Canucks are at. It can be frustrating for fans. I completely understand that. It can be frustrating to watch sometimes. I agree with that. But it's where this team is at. And unfortunately, like right now, there is no feasible way for Rick Tocchet or any coach to look at this roster and say, you know what? We're going to play more run and gun. That's how we're going to win games.
No, that they're not built for that, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And that's something Tocchet,
I would like to watch it, though.
It would be fun. They played like Colorado every night, I would love it.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
If they had as much talent as Colorado, that would also be great. Yeah. I would love to see a team play a more aggressive style than Rick Tocchet's Canucks do. And you know, one thing that like concerns me just a little bit from the perspective of my long-term viewing enjoyment, right? Because, you know, and granted, I'm selfish, but you get into a job where you get to watch hockey for a living. That's like something you look forward to. And you know, the Canucks haven't been exactly my cup of tea, aesthetically speaking.
Yeah. Have you mentioned that before?
I talk about it often.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, one thing I'd say is like, look at where this team is at. Look at where the best assets in the organization are, right? Look at what's coming on the back end. Like this team, why would this team play differently than Rick Tocchet's Coyotes over the next couple years unless they graft some real elite forward talent into the lineup when you've got Hronek and Hughes and, you know, Marcus Pettersson and Volander and Tyler Myers and Elias Pettersson and Mancini and on, right? Like, it's like they don't have a Mancini who's a forward, really. You know, like they don't have an answer to that.
No.
If Lekkerimäki's your analog for
Volander,
like they don't really even have an Elias Pettersson.
No, like the one guy you can maybe make an argument for is Atu Ratu, but even then it's like, well. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's maybe if he gets moved to the wing, but at center, he's going to be, you know, I think pretty clearly a bottom six guy. Maybe on the wing, like he's got good hands and tight. I think maybe there could be a little bit more offensive juice there on the wing. But yeah, so point being, like, why is this team going to stop playing low event hockey in the near future? They're probably not. Like, yeah, this is probably going to be, unless they can do an incredible job grafting a ton of talent in the lineup, this is probably going to be the style of hockey they're going to have to play, whether Rick Tocchet's their coach or not.
I do think this is also the style of hockey management wants to play, right? So
Rutherford wants to play up-tempo hockey generally. I think I'm sure they're on the same page with talk about, like, this is how we have to do it for right now. But I don't think, like, you know, you think about those Pittsburgh Penguins teams or the Carolina Hurricanes team that, you know, that's small mobile defenders,
mm-hmm,
right? Lots of like depth defense as opposed to high quality guys, lots of speedy wingers. Like, it's been a totally different world for those teams.
But
in a lot of ways, the Canucks, you know, just don't have that. And star players, like star players, fundamentally star, like tested veteran players added to the lineup. Those are Rutherford hallmarks. That's not really where this team's at right now.
Mm-hmm. It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Drantz. That's going to do it for today's show. You're not here tomorrow. Long weekend.
I'm not, yeah.
For Thomas Drantz. Enjoy your day off.
Thank you.
Extra day off. I'm sure you will be watching a lot of college basketball. So have fun.
Thank you, bud.
I will be back tomorrow, though. Bick Nizar will be co-hosting with me. Thank you to everyone texting in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Everyone listening as well. Thank you to Lena. Thank you to Costa producing the show. Thank you to Thomas Drantz, my co-host. I have been Josh Elliott Wolf. This has been Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.